Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Bertanes, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we have a great guest here to introduce, and I can't wait to introduce her. It's Sasha Kamili. She crashed Gucci, rebroke fashion rules, and turned activism into elegance. Sasha Kamili on courage, conscience, and rebel style. So first, we want to kick off with her song, selected by her.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever, and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy you can't follow their rules. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they've tortured and scared you for 20-odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion and sex and TV. And you think you're so clever and classless and free. But you're still fucking peasants as far as I can see. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. There's room at the top, they are telling you still. But first you must learn how to smile as you kill. You want to be like the folks on the hill. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.
Welcome here on the show, Sasha Kamili.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Annabelle. It's so great to be here.
I was still with a song selected by you, which I really, really like. And but I think I have to tell the listeners a few things before about you that they can assume and bring it also together who started out the song, right? So, what if style wasn't about status, but about values? What if rebellion didn't shout, but walked the runway with purpose? Today's guest is a woman who proves that conscience can be chic, that activism can be intelligent, and that fashion can be a force for real change. She challenged luxury brands from the front row, built global platforms for vegan fashion, and became one of the most influential voices where ethics, aesthetics, and courage meet. Named one of Glamour's most empowering now gen activist and new gen activist, author, journalist, podcaster, and unapologetic disruptor. This is a conversation about identity, integrity, and the quiet power of choosing differently. Welcome, Sasha Camilli.
Oh, that was quite an introduction. Thank you so much.
We talked in the morning already about animals, and we talked also about our deep connection to animals, right? While saying this, I have 2 meters away from me somebody sitting who is listening very carefully. And I know if I would say his name, he would then look at me and greet me, like saying, "Hello, I know that I'm part of this." A dog, one of the animals I really adore. But to be honest, I adore all animals. But now it's about you, Sasha. If we go back into childhood, often things start with that, with our early connections, with our early rememberings, with our early experiences. What kind of child were you? And maybe you would like to share an experience with us, which maybe shows us also why the small Sasha has grown into this Sasha, which is fighting for the good.
Well, you're right to say that so much of who we are and who we become begins in childhood. I definitely agree with that. I cannot pinpoint exactly the moment when I realized, for example, where meat came from, but I knew that as soon as I knew, I instinctively felt that I opposed that. And I was always under the impression that this is just what everyone did. We ate animals, we wore animals. This is just how the world worked, and there was nothing that anyone could do about it. But I have always had a very deep connection with animals, with the animals around me, but also with animals that, I read about in books. And whenever there was an animal, I instinctively felt a deep connection to them. I grew up with, a family where there were always, well, a lot of the time we had dogs. I grew up, however, with a belief instilled in me that animals should be respected. And a very close friend to the family was a vegetarian. So when I realized what that was and that it was actually possible to live this way, I felt like all of my sort of limitations and hurdles that I've set for myself were melting away. And I thought I could actually do this too. If my, well, she's not really my aunt, but she's like an aunt to me. So I thought if my aunt is doing this, then so can I. Why not? And so at 11, well, I can't say I became pescatarian. I didn't know there was a word for that, but I was just someone who didn't eat meat. And I was the only one in my school, I think the whole school, to do that. And it was, I was kind of used to being different. That this was just another way in which I was different. I went through a quite long and persistent spell of bullying when I was a child. It mainly came from being an immigrant child. I was born in Russia. I moved to Sweden when I was 6 years old, and that's where I grew up. And from moving all the time, changing schools constantly, always being the new child, I found myself in quite a lot of bullying. Being really bad at sports had a lot to do with it as well. So there was just one more way in which I was different, is that I didn't eat meat. But I think also having that experience of being bullied, of being an outsider, of being seen as less than, also strengthened my connection with all of the other beings whom we sometimes look down on, whom we view as less than us. And I think that is a big part of what encouraged me to sort of, stand up for the ones who needed defending in society, who need us to speak up for them.
Thank you so much for sharing this with me. While you were telling this this story, I came up early story from me. I just want to share with you quickly. We as a family, we moved from a capital city in Germany to a rural area, and we had there was a lot of animals, and these were my biggest friend because I felt as a foreigner with the kids around, from the kids around, as they were speaking differently. I was dressed up differently, and they were treating animals like, they were teasing the animals and pushing animals, and I hated all these kids because of that. And I was really friend with a rabbit we had at home. And one day I came home, and we had as a lunch rabbit soup. And I said, "Where's my rabbit?" And my mother said, "Sorry, this rabbit is now in the soup." And that day I went so angry, but it was because it was not discussed with me. It was my friend, and they murdered my friend. They even gave me the friend to eat. And this I found so insane that it disturbed the contact and the relationship to my parents really, until now. And that's where I started to fight for animals' rights. And I think I was 7 or 8 on, and I have this deep in my roots. And I think if we get also the stories from other kids, which maybe experience different things but don't have that so present, we could be maybe even more to fight for this, right?
Absolutely. I've heard these stories before. I've heard friends whom the same things happened to, who grew up in sort of a rural context, and they also were very close to some of the animals in their environment. And then one day they found them on their plates. This is not the first story I've heard of this. And it's really interesting to see how children are, well, you describe, and I'm sure there's lots of instances of this, of children actually being cruel to animals. But instinctively, if we're without the impact and maybe influence of the group mentality of other children around us, and it's just us with that rabbit or with another animal, we are, many of us are instinctively compassionate, and we do sort of strike up those friendships. And there is a way to form bonds and friendships outside the boundary of species. And it's interesting to see how children, when we're free from outside influence, we don't really discern. This is just, that rabbit is a friend, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you described it very nicely, and I had already an imagination in my head how you grew up with a lot of animals around you and feeling like a foreigner, but being surrounded by great animals where you could talk to. And it seems to me that this moral compass you have that came from yourself, was it there also another person as your own, for example, who gave you also the idea that yes, you can eat vegetarian, and this is something which is a decision, or were there also other people around you who shaped your, let's say, kind of moral compass early on?
So when I was a child, it wasn't that, if an 11-year-old today would be a vegetarian, I don't think there would be anything, like there would be other vegetarians, there'd probably be vegan children as well. But and in my time, that wasn't really, this was the 90s, so it wasn't really a thing yet. But I kind of stuck with being vegetarian and got into anti-fur activism when I was a teenager. There were organizations in Sweden where I grew up. There's one group called Djurens Rätt. It means the rights of animals, and they did a lot of street protests. And I remember I had a pin saying "No animal testing" on my backpack that I bought from them. But then, I moved around a lot when I grew up. I moved to Los Angeles when I was 19. Then I moved to Italy, and it wasn't until much later. It wasn't until I was 29 that I read a book called Eating Animals by Jonathan Safran Foer. I recommend that book to everyone. It is absolutely devastating. It will break your heart into a million pieces. It's a book that speaks about the factory farming system and the various impacts it has. And I liked to think that I was quite informed already, but when I read that book, it shattered my worldview. And I started seeing cruelty and abuse everywhere I went. I went into a supermarket and I thought, okay, all of these cosmetics, shampoos, cleaning products, they've all been tested on animals. Someone suffered and died so that we can have a shower gel that smells like roses. Or there's the meat aisle, the dairy, the fish. Like everywhere I looked, I saw cruelty. Even when I saw a happy dog in the street, I thought of all the dogs who were abandoned, all the dogs who were mistreated. And, you know, I got to a stage where I felt I have to do something about this. I have to be a part of, no matter how small, I still need to be a part of changing at least a tiny sliver of the world. And that is how I started transitioning to a vegan lifestyle and started looking into other things that I could do to be of help to this cause. I did more activism. I became a freelance writer for an Italian animal rights organization. And when I moved to London, I started my magazine and got into the kind of work that I do with PETA. So actually, it was a huge pivot for me. It was a big life change that it's crucial to the person I am now.
When you look back, could you imagine that it turns into this, that you have this life as you do now, Sasha?
No, I could never have imagined that. You know, I grew up thinking that this kind of activism and advocacy is something that you do as a volunteer. I could never even have thought that it could become a career, but I'm so glad that it did. I always imagined from when I was at university that I'd be working in fashion. And in some ways, I still am, but in a whole different way. And it's so much better than I could ever have thought.
Before the break, give me the time to ask you another question. I mean, we have now a few companies already, and I hope it will grow much, much more. And you just said that you could imagine only that you were voluntarily in this field, but now it is your job. And it's a great job where you are working in fashion industry, but in a completely different way. There are companies like Patagonia, which are writing exactly this in their description for getting candidates, where they write, "We would love to have people which are doing activism, which are activists fighting for a planet we want to live in." Is this something you think this could be a trend, or would you say that's just a few rare companies, just as Patagonia, which really want to have exactly these people as you are?
I think it started getting more into the mainstream with the fact that there's a climate crisis and we have to face that. And that sort of brought about a conversation in different industries. And in that sense, it is something that's tied to our times. But I don't think it's going away, because unfortunately, the climate crisis isn't going away. So it is something that is here to stay. I think it is a factor that we need to factor into a lot of decisions. Who are we do want to be as people, as professionals? What impact do we want to have on the world?
Absolutely. And I hope that your words are true, that this is a kind of a movement of companies understanding that they can do so much more, and having these right people, which are not just supporting, but also following a new way of life, which has the most goal that we want a world worth living in, where climate crisis is not the number one topic, because it touches us all, but where we can talk more about freedom for animals and nice treatment for animals and same rights for all people in the world, or things like this, right? So we have now a small break of approximately 2 minutes, and stay tuned, because we see each other afterwards again.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job. She was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Continuing the talk with Sasha, I can't wait asking her further questions about, of course, the fashion industry. Sasha told me before the break that she couldn't imagine when she was young that it turned into a job being an activist and being in the fashion industry even, where there are done so many mistakes right now, still right now. So, Sasha, maybe for the ones which are listening to us, which have no idea what is happening in the fashion industry. You shared a few numbers with us before the show. Would you mind to give just a kind of picture what we are facing there in the fashion industry? If we have in mind what we said about climate crisis, overproduction, but also animal testing, that our listeners get an idea how important your job is.
Oh, wow. Where do I start? Unfortunately, you know, we all wear clothes every day. So fashion affects each and every one of us. Even if we don't think it does, the industry has an impact on everyone who gets dressed in the morning. And for a long time for me, this was something that I thought would be, you know, my path in life. I studied fashion marketing and merchandising. And after my degree, I went into work as a journalist and an editorial copywriter with different publications, with online retailers in different countries. And it was perhaps there that I started to learn more and realize about the scope of the issues that go on in the fashion industry. From massive overproduction, the equivalent of a garbage truck of textiles is burnt or sent to landfill every single second. So you can imagine how much clothing is being destroyed, created, and wasted again. And this is even a more devastating issue if we think about the impact it has specifically on animals, as that is the kind of work that I do. And it is through this work that I learned that about a billion animals are killed for leather every single year. Imagine a billion animals, each of them a sentient individual who valued their lives, who was curious and playful and loved their young and felt all the same emotions that our dogs and cats do. And most of these animals, they live in the factory farming system, which is, you know, a system of extreme confinement where they face risks of diseases, undergo painful mutilations, and are killed way before their lifespan in often what is a terrifying and incredibly violent death in the abattoir. And this is such a widespread issue because of the large scales of animals. Still today, millions of animals are killed for fur, despite it having virtually disappeared from international runways. Wild animal skins is not something I had any idea about before I started working in this field because it is such a niche thing. But the investigations that PETA entities have conducted into the wild animal skins industry is something of the worst things that I have ever seen. It is incredibly grim and violent, and it is such a stark contrast with the very glamorous, the very elevated image of these garments and accessories that were sold. And even things like wool, which most of us have worn at some point, which I used to wear myself, wool, alpaca, mohair, cashmere, all of these materials, they are products of the animal agriculture industry, which has an incredibly high environmental impact, deriving from raising millions of animals on such a massive scale. And undercover investigations into these industries have shown that, in all animal rearing, animals are only seen as commodities, not as living, sentient individuals. And they are treated as nothing but machinery. Whenever they're cut during shearing, they're either just left bleeding or they're sometimes sewn up with a needle and thread. We've seen workers hitting animals, kicking them, stomping on them. And let's not forget that no animal in the fashion industry gets a happy retirement on a farm. Well, aside from those that are lucky enough to be rescued and sent to a sanctuary. But the vast, vast, vast majority of them is sent to the slaughterhouse as soon as production declines and their bodies are no longer considered valuable. So it's a massive, mountain to climb in terms of the work that has to be done. But there is also progress happening in the industry. With the fact that it's easier to spread a message than ever before with social media, with the arrival of the internet, more and more people are learning about these issues. They're realizing that, first of all, that animals, every animal is an individual. They value their lives just as much as we do. They have personalities. They love their families. They have many amazing qualities about them. Cows can remember other cows, and sheep make friends. Even snakes have complex relationships and social circles. So when you learn all of this, it's harder to justify, harming and killing animals for bag or jacket. And from this conscience, a new wave of innovation has been born. So today we're no longer just stuck choosing between, wearing a dead animal or wearing a petroleum-derived synthetic alternative. We have a whole new wave of environmentally conscious natural materials that replicate leather, wool, fur in a high quality, innovative, very stylish manner. And this is something I always try to bring forward whenever I do my guest lectures at fashion universities, for example, to introduce students to a new generation of materials and a new way to work that is more conscious and kind to the planet and everyone we share it with.
It's great that you were saying this, Sasha, that people can book you, that I can have you for presentations, that I can have you for coming into schools or universities for to big events to speak out loud and give back and give some further information just as this. Because a lot of people, I think, have no idea about what's happening, and they are so disconnected to nature, to themselves, to their own feelings, to the planet, that the feelings the animals have, the pain the animals feel, they even don't have on their plate. So as if this is something which is completely out of the planet. And therefore I think it's so important to give people also an idea about this emotional side, because it is, besides every fact, it is very emotional. And over this, I was so much involved in this, what you said, that I forgot my next question. But but Sasha, I mean, you stepped into fashion, and of course it is super, it's very clear that you did this exactly where the eye of the storm is. Can you imagine the first time you sat in the front row on a catwalk during a fashion show, what feelings came up to you while you were seeing what you have seen?
Well, you know, the first time I went to Fashion Week, I was still a fashion student, so I wasn't really aware of most of these issues. Even so, I was the most outspoken sort of student in my class at the time at university. I always tried to sort of bring ethics into the conversation, even though I didn't know that much. But I would talk about being against fur. I would talk about animal testing in cosmetics. I was often told to just sweep those things aside. I was told, you cannot think like that. This is a business. We cannot let emotions come in. There's no ethics in business. And that's, I think, is so interesting. If you see how the fashion industry has evolved and how ethics are now a huge part of the industry, and it's a big conversation that's happening. And I think this is due largely to the climate crisis and the conversations that we're forced to be having, but also because there is a shift in consciousness about our fellow animals and learning more about not only who they are and how each of them is an individual and the way that they, you know, perceive the world and are in the world and move about the world, but also about the large scale suffering that affects each and every one of the individuals whom we exploit and torment just for the sake of having new trends, new fashion items come into stores every single month. And people are feeling more empowered to do something. And I surely never would have imagined myself crashing a fashion show and, you know, just walking up on a catwalk with a sign saying Gucci ban exotic skins, which is what I did a couple of years ago. But, you know, if someone would have told me as a teenager that I would have done something like that, I would have been incredibly proud of myself. I wouldn't have imagined that I would have had the courage, but I would have been very thrilled to hear that.
Can you tell us a little bit more about this situation, when you how you prepared it, and what happened exactly, what you really did exactly, and how the environment reacted on this, and what happened then afterwards?
Well, you know, this is something that my colleagues at PETA and other people who've been working at PETA entities used to do way before my time. This is something that people did in the 80s, 90s, these really disruptive actions, but they hadn't been done for a while. And it is something that is a very strong action, but sometimes strong actions are what's needed because when you are on a brand's actual catwalk, they cannot ignore you. And this is never the first step for us. We always try to start with a dialogue with the brand. But if we find that they're not being responsive, we're not going to just quietly go away and be like, oh, we tried. We're always going to, you know, we're going to keep campaigning and keep working until, you know, those cages are empty. So the preparation for it is, you know, it's very meticulous. It's a lot of work go from multiple people goes into coordinating and orchestrating something like this. And it was the first season that different PETA entities did a string of disruptions. We had New York Fashion Week, London Fashion Week, then me at Milan Fashion Week, and then Paris Fashion Week. And it was a very coordinated effort of getting into the show and then getting on the catwalk. It is something that, especially the getting ready bit, and then when you're just about to do it, it's not for the faint of heart. I cannot say that I was completely, you know, calm going into it. It is very stressful. It is kind of a scary experience. But, you know, once I was on the runway, I was completely in my element. It was just so amazing to me that I had you know, we'd pulled this off. And, you know, little things you think about, like holding up the sign the right way up and things like that, and being sure that I was walking in the direction of the photographers so that, you know, my role at PETA is manager of PR. So I'm thinking, you know, from a press perspective, like I need to have the photo of the sign in front of the photographers so that it's clear what are we doing here? Why is there someone on the catwalk? It needs to be obvious that this is an animal rights action that we're talking to the brand about wild animal skins. And this is what it was. It was part of our campaign to ask Gucci and, you know, other brands as well. But that particular action was aimed at Gucci as it was their fashion show. We're asking them to move away from wild animal skins. They were among the first brands among the most recent wave of fur bans. The CEO of Gucci, Marco Bizzarri, had come out in late 2017, I think it was, saying fur is not modern. And that kind of set off a domino effect in the industry with lots of brands banning fur as well, which was an amazing example set by Gucci. And we were calling on them to be leaders in the same way with wild animal skins and to say, you know, these materials are incredibly unethical. Animals are being nailed to trees, decapitated, their skin is being pulled off. Crocodiles are being killed by having metal rods jammed into their brains. It's really horrifying things. And this is all an industry that, because of how the animals are kept and housed, it is also a public health risk. It is a big threat of, you know, pathogens and zoonotic diseases spreading from workers handling animals, being in close contact with their bodily fluids. It's a dangerous industry on so many fronts. And no one really needs a thousands of pounds worth lizard skin handbag or snakeskin shoes. We should just put an end to this industry. So, you know, I was on the catwalk for, well, about 10 seconds before I got dragged off. I expected, obviously, to be dragged off, but it wasn't anything like. While I was waiting, I even got to chat to security about veganism and about animal rights. And some of them said, yes, we do understand why you did this. You do have a point. So I consider it a success on all fronts.
Great. I mean, as you all said, it needs not only braveness to stand up and knowing that maybe the police come later or some security to take you off. You get maybe also some problems because of this, but also standing in the right direction on the on this podium, on stage, that it's not just something the police see and the security, but also the people and the press and the people around, and that it has an effect. This is really, really great. And I think, as you said, I mean, it needs sometimes really actions which is visible if people don't act, and it's not changing anything. Because if we don't do something which is visible, okay, who will get information about this, right?
Exactly. And being on the catwalk means that the very people who need to see it will see it. They cannot avoid knowing, like, what's going on? Why is this person on the catwalk? And, you know, some of them might be interested and go and look it up and say, what is wild animal skins? What is this issue about? And that's how they learn more. And that's how they sometimes, you know, take a stand and take action.
We are facing another industrial revolution. And this means with AI, which does for us writing letters and do things, would you say that this keeps many people even more away from nature, even more away from animals, from feeling empathy also against this?
I think it's a double-edged sword, really. It can have different kinds of impacts. AI can be a positive force when it comes to combating animal testing, for example, as it can be helpful in developing alternatives. This is not something that I'm an expert on, but I know it can be helpful. But in other ways, yes, it can definitely create a divide, all of this technology. Absolutely. I mean, technology can also be a force for good. It has helped us, you know, the fact that it's so easy to spread a message these days. But, you know, with it being easy to spread a message, it can also be easy to spread misinformation, which can lead to, you know, greenwashing, different kinds of ethics washing in different industries. So technology is an extremely powerful tool. And as all powerful tools, it depends on how you use it.
Absolutely. So we have another small break of 2 minutes, and I'm very much looking forward to continue talking to you afterwards, because there's so much more to say. So stay tuned, and we are back in approximately 2 minutes.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative. Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
So let's continue the talk with Sasha. Sasha, we just had before the break this small sported experience from you crashing the Gucci catwalk and what it provided and how or why it is so important to do actions like this if people don't listen in a normal way. It is not the only thing, of course, you have done. So we should also go more to the next thing. For example, Valder. Why was it important for you to create Valder instead of fitting into existing media?
Well, you know, back at the time I started my digital magazine in 2013, there wasn't that much already existing that, you know, really brought up these issues in the way that I wanted to bring them up. I remember I have always read magazines. I started buying fashion magazines when I was a young teenager. I would like save money and go and buy American and British magazines at the international magazine shop in Stockholm. And I'd always love magazines. But as I transitioned to a vegan lifestyle, I remember just flicking through entire sections of these magazines that I used to love and thinking, there's nothing here for me. Everything is made with animals. There's leather, wool, silk, and everything. And all of the beauty products are tested on animals. This used to be interesting to me, and it's not anymore. And all of the recipes have meat and dairy in them. So I thought, what if I create something that's for people like me that has that kind of glossy element to it and really aspirational, but is also free from animal exploitation? So I started my own magazine, and I did it with, you know, Marie Claire magazine here in the UK. They used to have something called the Inspire Mentor Scheme, where they would pair people up with mentors. So they would choose five people who had interesting business ideas, and they would connect them with a mentor in their field to help them start their idea. And I was lucky enough to be chosen for that. And that's how the magazine started. I ended up running it for 6 years. I worked with an amazing team of freelancers around the world. We were featured in big publications. We were nominated for awards. It was a really amazing time to be doing it because it was just at the very beginning of the whole wave of new consciousness happening in fashion and people learning more about the provenance of clothes and the material extraction process and production processes and being more interested in how they could dress more consciously. What I'm particularly proud of is that we really gave we took the animal-free fashion conversation to a new level when it came to it looking interesting, appealing, desirable. We did some fashion shoots with really great brands to really elevate and celebrate how stylish and covetable sustainable fashion could be. And that's something I tried to bring onto my book as well, Vegan Style, which I released in 2019. It was the same thing there. I really wanted it to look like something beautiful, something aspirational, because at that time, that's what was missing from vegan fashion and ethical fashion, in my view. And I think on that front, brands have really come a long way. I think now we have so many amazing options that people just want because they look amazing and not just because they're ethically made, which is a great bonus. But the truth of the matter is we buy clothes because they speak to something that we want to express in terms of how they look. So that I think is very important. And I think with my magazine and my book, that is something that was front of mind.
I like very much your words that it's more than just be dressed against cold or against, or just to showcase something, but it's expressing your attitude, it's expressing your way of living and expressing also your political understanding, right? I mean, you define vegan style also much more than beyond materials. Do you want to add there something? Because, I mean, you created with a book, but also with a magazine, something which is bigger, bigger than you. It is a message which can be like a stone throwing it into water, getting you really, really a lot of attention and can change something to the better. Do you want to extend there a bit more? Maybe the reactions from people on the book, or maybe also what you say and what I really love, and that vegan style doesn't need to look really poor or boring, or so vegan style can look really great on people. It has nothing to do that you consume in a boring way or in a more less attractive way. Even it's more attractive because you're rooted and bonded to the nature. This is such a power you get.
Definitely. Well, you know, the reactions to all of this, like when I told people that I was starting a vegan fashion magazine or that I was writing a book about vegan fashion back in the day when I did, the reactions were often like, what do you mean? What do you mean vegan fashion? There's no meat in clothes. Like, what are you talking about? Can you eat the clothes? Like, no one even understood what I was talking about. And this is something that we at PETA also always work on spreading the message about, that a vegan life is more than just what's on our plates. Obviously, food is the first entryway in for many people. But, you know, living a compassionate lifestyle is about so much more. And this is, you know, at PETA, we work on many different fronts. But our main campaign areas are the areas where the largest number of animals suffer the most. So it is food, but it's also experimentation, clothing, entertainment, you know, areas where animals are abused constantly. And fashion is a huge, unfortunately, it's a huge area of torment and exploitation of animals. So for me, both with my work at PETA and with my work with the magazine, it was very much about, you know, expanding on what vegan meant to people. And I think now we've largely reached it. A lot of people are aware in the fashion industry as well, of the idea of animal ethics and why animals deserve respect and compassion. So now when I talk about my work in vegan fashion, many more people know exactly what I'm talking about. And there is a lot more understanding about why we do the kind of work that we do, because more people than ever can actually say, you know what, this is something that deserves attention. It is a problem. So many individuals in this industry are treated as nothing but objects. And if we think about it, most of us oppose that. Most of us don't want animals to be treated as just commodities. We do realize, if you've ever lived with a cat or a dog, you know exactly what I mean. You know that it is someone, not something, looking at you if you look at your cat or dog. They are individuals. And every cow, every sheep, every mink, every snake, every lizard, they're exactly the same. They also have that playfulness and curiosity and affection towards their loved ones. It doesn't change in all of the ways that matter. All animals are very similar. And once you realize that, that is sort of a baseline that it's hard to move from when it comes to justifying treating them like like a piece of plastic or some cotton or some fabric. It's not. It's a living individual who values their life.
Absolutely. I mean, we heard so much from you, and I hope that it's touching a lot of people listening to us now. And I think in the end, I think sometimes people get overloaded with things and they don't know where to start. Do you have maybe three good hacks for people which want to go closer into animal support, and three really simple hacks that can put into their daily life?
Absolutely. So if you want to make a difference with the way you dress and really make a change in the world, the first thing that I would tell you is get informed and take it slow. Take in the information a little bit at a time. Don't overwhelm yourself, and especially balance the depressing, hard-hitting stuff with some positives. And on our website, peta.org.uk, you can see all of the issues and read all the information about what happens to animals. And you can see all of the investigative footage as well. If you want to learn more about wool specifically, you can go on to woolfacts.com that has all of the investigations into the wool industry. There's 15 of them into more of 100 sheep shearing facilities around the world. But also on the website, peta.org.uk, you can find more information about actions you can take. And you can see all of the material innovation that's taking place. You can visit petaapprovedvegan.com for over 1,000 brands that offer vegan options. You can go to the plant wool section on woolfacts.com to read more about wool made from hemp, bamboo, banana fiber, beer residue. I mean, there's so many different amazing material innovations being developed and already available on the market. So the first thing I would tell everyone is to get more information so that you know, knowledge is power, you know, have a bit more background to go on. The second thing that you can do is to make your voice heard. Contact the brands where you shop and ask them what their animal welfare policy is. And here it's important to be really discerning, because so many brands will hide behind certifications, labels, responsible standards. If there is one thing I want listeners to remember from this, it's that all of these, you know, responsible certifications, humane certifications, they're marketing tools. They exist to make consumers feel better, not animals. It is almost impossible to be able to guarantee that an animal-derived garment was ethically made, because it's so hard to enforce these standards and labels and certifications. It is very difficult to be able to promise this because of the transparency in the industry. It's so murky and difficult. There's so many middlemen. So find out what brands are doing to replace animal-derived materials with, you know, all of the amazing plant-based materials that are out there today. And even if you don't get much of a response, it's very good to have spoken up, because brands will know that customers care. And obviously, the third piece of advice that I want to give is that if anyone wants to be involved beyond just, you know, okay, I'm shopping vegan, I'm speaking up, but what else can I do on a larger scale? You can always get involved with campaigning work. You can sign up for our action team at peta.org.uk and, you know, join these actions, join protests, marches, just even sign petitions. We always need people to help, and we're always looking for new voices to add to the campaign. So feel free to join us, get involved, sign up and be part of what we do and part of the movement to protect all animals from a life of misery and exploitation. It's only when, you know, some people think like, oh, but I'm just one person, how can I make a difference? But when it's many people that join together, and each of them is just one individual, but if lots of us join together, that's how all the tiny little drops in the ocean become a big wave.
Absolutely. And I think this is important. Every little step is not every little step. Every little step is a piece of something bigger. It can be a big puzzle or a big shout out. Sasha, we said in the beginning you're facing very good things, people, supporting people, understanding what you're doing, things changing also to the better. But on the other hand, you see really bad pictures. You see the truth. You see the figures, facts, and numbers, and this could, really, really easily kick you down. What are your hacks, health hacks, mental health hacks you do over the day to keep yourself really fresh and energized on the things that you have to need enough energy for, right?
This is something I think that all activists and advocates face. Like, how do we keep ourselves from getting dragged down by all the misery we see all the time? For me, exercise is my biggest, like, it's my go-to. Regular exercise, I could never live without it. I go to gym, I do yoga, Pilates. I think it's, for me, it's crucial for my mental health. Something else that I do is, I walk a lot. I take a lot of long walks. I think just disconnecting from everything, just not having anything to like think about, to listen to, not have many impressions come in constantly, but just shut everything off and just letting my brain wander and maybe being in nature. I'm lucky enough to live by the seafront, so just walking on the beach or walking in nature is amazing. It's really simple. It's something most people can do. And then finally, find a place for fun, for entertainment, for watching something silly, for laughing with a friend or a loved one. And it's not something to feel guilty about. It's a way to stay energized so you can get back to campaigning with a freshened mind and feeling rested and ready to take on all the work that needs to be done.
Well, I love your tips. I love your tips because they're possible to be done for everybody. And it's the easy things, no? It's the easy things we can change really a lot. So unfortunately, Sasha, we come today to an end. Thank you so much for the engaging discussion, for the inspiring insights. I really look forward to our ongoing exchange and the impact we will continue to make the world a better place together.
Thank you so much for having me. It went so quickly. Thanks so much for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Absolutely. So that brings, unfortunately, We Empower, the weekly radio show dedicated to celebrating the strength, resilience, and limitless potential of us around the world tour. And join us again next week as we continue on this empowering journey, sharing real triumph, stories of triumph, upliftment, and empowerment. Your presence and engagement mean the world to us, and we appreciate you taking the time to tune in. So remember, this time is a gift for you to discover new inspiration, embrace exciting insights, and find the motivation to live life to the fullest. Thank you for being part of our community. Until next time, keep shining and empowering others. Together, we rise. Thank you.